Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. And truth be told, this was on the list of possible bad martinis earlier in the week because it looked like David Jolly, the Republican candidate, had very little chance of holding Florida's 13th congressional district for the Republicans. It was a seat that Congressman Bill Young held for well over 30 years till he passed away last year. Jolly has had some issues with his campaign. Some have called it dysfunctional. Alex Sink was a name known statewide. She held elected office, nearly was elected governor in 2010. Ultimately, it looks like Obamacare was a key winning issue for David Jolly. He won by about 3,400 votes. Joe Scarborough pointing out that this is really bad news for Democrats for a number of reasons. Number one, it's very hard to try and say you'll just fix Obamacare. And number two, the Democrats had a golden chance against a weak candidate and blew it.
Defending this act that no Democrats have tried to defend over the past 4 years. They just don't do it because you can't do it on the campaign trail unless you like losing. And she did this against a candidate that, again, I can't state it enough. People inside Florida and Washington, D.C. said he was just a lousy, lousy candidate.
Candidate is what got cut off there. And so, Jim, we should probably be smart not to extrapolate this to the whole 2014 midterm cycle because we certainly wouldn't have done that if he had lost. But the fact that somebody like Jolly was able to win, that's pretty good news for the GOP this year.
Undoubtedly. I mean, like, yes, this, you know, we can make too much of a special election result like this, but you can also make too little of it. We talk about the flawed Republican candidate. You know, he never run for office before. Had been a staffer for Bill Young for a while. Then he became a lobbyist. And Greg, as you no doubt have noticed, lobbyists aren't terribly popular these days. Also, he's about 41 years old. He recently got a divorce, and he's now with a girlfriend who is about 14 years younger than him. Consultants tend to tear their hair out over circumstances like this. You could say, oh, it's his personal life. It's his own business, but let's just say the optics look a little bit awkward in circumstances like that. So Republicans in Washington were bracing themselves to say, hey, don't blame us. We had a lousy candidate. He couldn't campaign his way out of a paper bag, and that's why we lost. Lo and behold, they weren't. Now, this doesn't mean that David Jolly was a good candidate. I think a lot of their assessments are accurate. What really makes this significant is that, look, we should also emphasize that, yes, Alex Sink ran statewide and had been elected to statewide office before. She came close to winning the governor's race. So she's not a bad candidate, but she had her share of gaffes suggesting that we needed amnesty in order to have hotel maids and gardeners and stuff like that. So she's got her flaws. So what it tells us is in a district that Obama carried it by a percentage point and McCain had carried it by like a percentage point, you know, pretty much a swing district, a bad Republican candidate can beat a bad Democratic candidate on neutral territory by emphasizing Obamacare. As I'm writing up for a piece for NRO for later today, a very solid get-out-the-vote operation. And we on the right are not used to seeing these sort of things. We're used to seeing, you know, what was it, the whale program of Romney or whatever it was,
Orca.
Crash and burn and all that stuff. So it looks like the Republicans may have actually gotten their act together on this front. Lots of nice words for David Jolly's campaign and the NRCC and all these outside groups that were contributing manpower and advertising and money and all this sort of stuff. You know, it's a special election, so you're not going to get a high turnout amongst independents. It basically is who can bring out their base better. Republicans did this. They weren't sure they're going to be able to do this. What I think is most significant about this is that if, you know, like I said, if a lousy Republican can be a lousy Democrat in neutral territory, well, imagine how what Tom Cotton can do up against Mark Pryor in Arkansas, a fairly Republican-leaning state. North Carolina, Louisiana. I mean, there are a good seven pretty darn Republican-leaning states, whereas a red state Democrat is running, that are nowhere near as even as this district was in these circumstances. So for good reason, you know, if the political environment is not terribly different on the air, and a Republican who runs on Obamacare and says this thing's an abomination, it's terrible, it's hurting Americans, and we've got to get rid of it, has a very effective winning message that will bring out the GOP base when he needs it in November.
Yeah, that's a good sign. And keep in mind, Alex Sink never actually voted for Obamacare. She wasn't in Congress. All these people actually have to defend their vote, in addition to the fact that they won't do much to repeal it, certainly, or even reform it in a major way. And kudos to the Get Out the Vote effort, as you mentioned. That was one of the big head-scratchers in the post-mortem report from 2012. It was Orca that didn't work well.
That's right. Yeah, it was some sort of large aquatic animal that you picture flopping around, gasping for air and outside of fish out of water and all that. One other point, just I remember is Rick Wilson, who's a very smart, very funny, sharp-tongued Florida political operative, who pointed out there, the difference between Alex Sink and a lot of the Democrats running for office in November is that there's no video of her saying, I voted for Obamacare and I'm proud of it. There's no video of her saying, if you like your plan, you can keep it. For a whole bunch of Democrats, they said that stuff, and that can be used against them in ads and really kind of, you know, underline and emphasize and also just attack their credibility for anything else they're saying in the fall. So,
and one of the things we'll see from those Democratic incumbents is an effort to demonize the opponent, or in some cases, as we transition to our bad martini, just demonize anybody you feel like it, even whether they're your opponent on the other side of the ballot or not, because that's what Alaska Democrat Mark Begich is doing. We don't even know who his Republican opponent will be yet, but he's already decided that the real enemy this November is going to be the Koch brothers.
I'm Mark Begich, and I approve this message.
First, it was a D.C. actress pretending to be an Alaskan. Now, ads attacking Mark Begich on a carbon tax have been called false and not true. Who's behind the attacks?
The Koch brothers.
The billionaire Koch brothers.
I do not believe it.
They come into our town, fire a refinery.
Just running it into the ground.
Leaving a mess.
A lot of Alaskans are losing jobs, and I'm definitely concerned about the drinking water.
I don't go down to tell them what to do. I expect them not to come up to Alaska and tell us what to do.
Devastating, Jim. I don't think Charles Koch's going to win this one.
Yeah, you know, also, it's good. He's not accepting any donations from out of state, right? All this money comes from, because, you know, and he won't let the DSCC come in and run ads on his behalf because, hey, right, those 527 groups or super PACs, because, look, that's outside money, right, Greg? You know?
Yeah.
What's really kind of intriguing about this ad, and also Harry Reid's increasingly erratic and batty comments on the Senate floor, calling the Koch brothers un-American, guys who keep funding hospitals and museums and performing arts centers and stuff like that, in addition to their political donations. Apparently somebody made a real point to Harry Reid that in order to survive the midterms, Democrats have to pick an enemy and stick to it and just demonize the bejesus out of that enemy. And it looks like they've decided the Koch brothers. Now, maybe it works well because most Americans haven't heard the Koch brothers, and thus they're picturing, you know, we have a very old school reference here, Greg, you'll get this, Tomax and Zaymot from the old G.I. Joe cartoon, the evil twin brothers who are out doing nefarious things and stuff. It's a bad martini because it strikes me as bad politics. It strikes me as I don't like to see politicians demonizing private citizens for speaking their mind. I also am a little unnerved the possibility that it might work. I mean, you know, they clearly managed to convince some people that Mitt Romney gave steelworkers cancer with, you know, his hedge fund raise or something like that. So it's a very cynical strategy. It is very Alinskyite, you know, freeze the target, isolate it and demonize it and all those moves. And just the unnerving possibility it might work that, you know, they can somehow convince America that the Koch brothers are on the ballot in every state in the country. This could bring out the Democratic base and mitigate a bunch of their losses in the midterms.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And last week, President Obama was at this forum involving Hispanic media. Telemundo, Univision were there. And there was some attention to the fact that he kept telling immigrant families, if you sign up for Obamacare, there's no way your illegal relatives will get found out by immigration services. But then he also got this letter. One of the hosts read a letter from a person who wanted to sign up for Obamacare but couldn't. First, you'll hear the translation of the question, then Obama's answer.
This question here comes from a gentleman who says that he asked. He wanted Obamacare for a family of three, and he says, I make about $36,000 per year, and the minimum amount here is $315 per month. I think that's too much for me.
I guess what I would say is if you looked at that person's budget and you looked at their cable bill, their telephone, their cell phone bill, other things that they're spending on, it may turn out that it's just they haven't prioritized health care because right now everybody's healthy.
Now he went on to make a much better point that if you think it's expensive now, looking at the premium, just think about how much it'll cost if somebody gets really sick in your family. But Jim, the idea that you're supposed to give up your phone and your maybe cable, but your all your communication devices to make your payments for Obamacare, not exactly the best sell there.
Picking your plan on healthcare.gov will be the last time you use the internet ever. So, Greg, remember when, like, everyone said what a brilliant politician Barack Obama was, and how he just had this great charisma, and he just had this great ability with, you know, connect people, and does that statement to you sound like a great, brilliant connection with that audience of that Latino town hall? you people are spending too much money on stuff you don't need, you know. And let me tell you guys with your cell phones and your rather fancy phones and your internet and your cable bill, look, you don't need to be watching that cable stuff. I get my episodes of Game of Thrones sent to me for free in True Detective by straight from the CEO of HBO. So do what I do. You know, it just sounds arrogant and smug. And, you know, as I think it was Ben Howe who calculated, yeah, that's, you know, my cable bill and my phone bill come out to about one half of 1 month's premium. So no, Mr. President. And so once again, we see a guy who's allegedly, you know, the smartest man in the room, smartest man to ever be president. I think picking numbers out of his head. I don't think he really knows how much any of these things cost. Lord knows he hasn't paid for any of these things himself in a really long time. And so as a result of that, what's interesting, when you have to make that argument, can you really keep calling it the Affordable Care Act, Greg? Affordable if you give up your internet and cable and phone bill and phone, then yes, it is. No, then that's not affordable at all, Mr. President. But clearly he's on autopilot by now.
I think you're right. I don't remember this personally from the late 70s, but I'm certainly aware of it. There was, you know, the energy crisis of the late 70s, and Jimmy Carter's answer was to wear more sweaters if you don't like the cost of your energy bills. This kind of smacks of the same thing. You can't afford my brand new spanking, much more expensive than it would have been before, healthcare plan. Just cut your cable and your phone. You don't need those anyway.
Greg, a lot of people thought, you know, maybe it was this idea, his energy plan. I just think he was being paid off by big sweater. All the big wealthy, the Koch brothers were heavy into wool production back then. And as a result of it, it's, you know, well, I'm going to make energy really expensive, so everyone has to wear sweaters. You know, we all know they're behind Rick Santorum as well.
Oh, Jim, on that note, we'll call it a day. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch. Oh my God.